6K Sullivan versus Hunt. Mr. Hunt.
This case has gone on, as you well know, from 1994 to through March of 2003. There was a mini trial before Judge Lefkow, which made findings of fact and conclusions of law. Those findings of fact were finally adopted by Judge Nordberg. It was after that trial that a First Amendment complaint was filed, and that First Amendment complaint alleged matters like RICO, racketeering effect in a stock transaction in which myself, as being attorney of record for the corporation prior, had no involvement. And also,
I just asked a question, a point of information. Did you say that this case started with Judge Lefkow and went to Judge Nordberg?
No, it started with Judge Nordberg and then was given to, for purposes of discovery and initial hearings, to Judge Lefkow, who was a magistrate at that time.
I'm just trying to think of their sequence. As Article III judges.
No, she was a magistrate given the case by Judge Lefkow, Judge Nordberg at the time. I became involved in the matter as attorney of record for Ad Express back in early 94. After the mini trial, in which the law of the case was decided, a First Amendment complaint was filed. I had substituted out as attorney of record in June of 95. I have no knowledge of the First Amendment complaint being filed. The corporation went into bankruptcy in July of 95, a day after this First Amendment complaint was filed. Thereafter, we have a litany of a lot of lawyers and a lot of motions. A motion was brought by Matthew Iverson, an attorney here in Chicago, to have it dismissed. That motion was denied because of the RICO allegations, the security allegations, and so forth. So then we had to proceed through a series of motions, and at every single spot along the way, the oppositions were filed. And even to the point of the final motion filed in 2001, which they never responded to move the case along, and it's finally dismissed for lack of prosecution, even though there was a motion pending. Now, this motion was brought for sanctions under Rule 11 and under the RICO provisions for prevailing parties. The opposition has raised certain issues. First off, one of the points was that a per se lawyer can't recover fees. I was not a per se lawyer. The fact of the matter was I did not even answer the First Amendment complaint, ever. Never answered. I acted on behalf of Mr. Rilling, Mr. Hornsby, and Ad Express until Ad Express was dismissed in 1999 because of the bankruptcy. The fact of the matter was I did file motions to dismiss myself out of personal jurisdiction basis because I had no contact other than to represent the company here in Illinois. But I had to make, as you can imagine, about 10 trips back to Chicago here from California to represent these people and myself during this period of time. No per se representation here. Mr. Rilling and Mr. Hornsby are my clients. I owe a fiduciary duty to those people. They owe me fees. That's the fact of the matter. And they've owed me fees since this thing began. Mr. Rilling came back after the fall was taken. The court never even gave notice of the fact that there was a motion pending. In 2000, the fall was taken. We had to set aside. All the attorneys appeared at that time. What happened during this period of time? Well, a number of attorneys came in and out of this case, but there was never any motions for dismissal. So I have no idea who was representing who went. There seemed to be a progressive additional number of attorneys being added in as additional attorneys and so forth. Now, Rule 11 provides, and it's very pretty significant, that by presenting a court or later advocating a pleading or paper, an attorney is obligated to make an effective investigation. And that's what did not happen here. There was never, it doesn't appear to be that the attorney substituting in as additional attorneys or whatever ever made any kind of effort to investigate what had happened. If they had, they would have understood the First Amendment complaint had no basis at all. I mean, the findings of the case were already decided. The conclusions of the law of the case were decided. That was decided in April of 95. They're filing a complaint in July of 95. I mean, it didn't make any sense. The second provision says it's not for harassment or meaningfully increase the cost of litigation. Well, for 8 years, there's a significant cost to the court. I mean, this court had to spend all this time with all these people. I spent all this time. I came back and forth 10, 12 times to Chicago. And so, obviously, a lot of people were involved spending a lot of time on something that finally was never prosecuted and dismissed. There was no evidence of civil support for these allegations. I mean, after you have a mini trial and everybody testifies and the judge makes recommendations, that's the end of the story as far as I can see. I mean, there was never any changes to the facts or consensus in the case after that point. So, from the point of view of meeting some of the standards of Rule 11, I think it's clear. Under the RICO provisions, 1964C, you know, if you are damaged, injured your business or your property, where you can be damaged by losing money, having to travel, spend all your time to represent clients in matters that are completely frivolous. What makes these frivolous? Well, prior to the corporation going bankrupt in July of 95, I didn't send it, but the corporation, represented by other people at that time, sent a letter to the plaintiffs here and offered them $240,000 for their $60,000 investment made 18 months earlier. And they said if you didn't take this offer, the corporation's going to go into bankruptcy.
I guess my problem is under 1964C, it anticipates that only a plaintiff can recover under this statute. And it reads that a person injured in business or property by reason of a violation of 1962 may sue and can recover attorney's fees. I don't even understand how you can cite that provision or if there's any case that says that you get to you're entitled to mandatory fees and interprets that section the way you want it interpreted.
Well, I have to agree, Your Honor, that that's a stretch. I think it ties into Rule 11 sanctions. It's clearly where you are successful and are prevailing after having undergone a RICO. I mean, particularly for an attorney being subject to a RICO in a case in which he has no involvement. I mean, that's like one of the most significant types of filings that could ever be made against an attorney, at least in my mind. And so, obviously, I think that you're injured in your business, but you're absolutely right, Your Honor. I think I cannot find a direct connection there.
How about the timeliness issue under Rule 11, Mr. Hunt?
I think the time is okay under the Divine Rule, and the reason I say that, Your Honor, is this: you couldn't bring an action under a 21-day type of provision with when it's the First Amendment complaint that's being filed. In other words, that rule for 21 days deals with motions that are being made. And obviously, you give out safe harbor protection that way, where you can withdraw the motion. This complaint was filed. It wasn't served until November or December of 95. The complaint's in effect. The only way you can ever get to the basis of any sanctions would be at the end of the time. And it's provided in the legislative history that under certain circumstances, and I cite that in my brief, Your Honor, under certain circumstances, this is not a normal type of case, where you bring a frivolous motion, so forth. That's pretty easy to understand. This occurs, the only way you can prove it's frivolous is by either having everything dismissed or the case dismissed for lack of prosecution.
You're beyond the 90 days, though, on final judgment, right?
I don't think the 90-day rule applies hard and fast. I think it was after a motion to vacate. The way these people, when this came on.
I think our court has said that 90 days is the outer perimeter.
Well, but there's a motion to vacate, Your Honor. They bring a motion to vacate in here, and they basically, there's no way that under a motion to vacate, this case would be over. This case would go on for 8 years. You couldn't assume after final judgment, when they bring a motion to vacate the judgment, that you're going to be, this case is going to be over with.
Yes.
I mean, the fact that they've even brought the motion to vacate would seem to me to be warrant additional damages as a result of the fact that they weren't even willing to, at that point in time, to declare it was frivolous.
Yeah, but you didn't even make it assuming we take the date of the denial and motion to vacate. That's November 12th or 13th. You don't file for fees and costs and sanctions until February 14th, so you blow that date, and that's within the 90 days. The extension of the 90 days is within the discretion of the district court.
I think the divine rule is to state that it's actually reasonable. This is 91 days or whatever have you, and there's a 30-day tolling period after the motion to vacate, Your Honor. I think that this motion was brought as soon as it could have been brought after the conclusion, and it was not being withheld. I mean, I don't see a statute of limitation in the Rule 11 anyway. There's no the 90-day rule there is primarily to make sure things are done on a timely basis, Your Honor. But I don't think that in this case, after 8.5-9 years, that you're trying to gather up materials and everything else to bring this motion, that you could have been brought any sooner.
Well, certainly you could file a motion and ask for leave to file the additional documentation at a later time. Get the motion on file.
That's
explain to the court that you're trying to get all this information together to stop the clock.
That's possible, Your Honor, yes. Okay, I'll save the rest of my time.
Well, don't have any.
Well, I don't.
I'm afraid you haven't used it all, Mr. Mr. Morgan.
Good morning. Kevin Morgan for Terry Donahoe and my firm. In my initial brief, my only one, I had waived oral argument. I was happy that it was granted when preparing for it because I've noticed something factually that's not in my brief that I think is very important here. On page 11 of the short appendix, the transcript of the hearing before Judge Nordberg, I guess it's page 4 of the transcript record, page 11. Judge Nordberg said, regarding the timeliness issue, the current motion for attorney's fees was filed on February 14, 2003, which is more than 90 days after the case ended. And he goes on to say that there's a bright line rule of 90 days in this district and cites the Northlake case. A couple of pages later, on page 6, Mr. Hunt responds this way. If that is not, that's my reading of the, I looked at that fairly extensively. You are right as far as the 90-day rule from the motion to vacate affirmation November 19, which would put you at February 19. I filed on February 14. Well, no, it was not on February 19, despite the representation to Judge Nordberg. We were trying to, opposing counsel, who brought this appeal, was trying to buy another 5 days there, because in his own appendix, he attaches Judge Nordberg's order. The order was entered on November 13th, and then it was docketed on November 14th. So we go 90 days out from there, and I figure they're at 93 days when they filed this sanctions motion. But he represented to Judge Nordberg he was within the 90 days. Then in the brief in this case, he says that Judge Nordberg did not take into consideration the tolling of it because of the other because of the vacation motion. But of course, Judge Nordberg, on that page I just read, did date it from November 13th. So that's another little game we're playing here with the facts on the opposing side. Now, regarding all these other issues, the record here is so clear that this is such an infirm appeal and an infirm motion to begin with. Besides being outside the 90 days, you already heard the RICO language. He just told you it was a stretch. He filed this motion and he filed this appeal in spite of the fact that he knows his own motion and his own appeal are at best a stretch. Well, it's not a stretch because there's no violation of RICO here. And therefore, there are no attorney's fees. There are only attorney's fees for a plaintiff in a RICO case. The Rule 11 motion is also just pretty amazing. He wants $63,000 going back to 1994. Well, I came in because I was representing, I came in, called in during the bankruptcy case of my client, Terry Donahoe, to just look into this case. Of all that $63,000, as I pointed out in the brief, there are 18.5 hours that my firm did And the only motion that was brought there, a motion to dismiss, we defeated that motion to dismiss. There is a procedural matter here why it was dismissed. And we need not go into that, as I said in my brief. That's all done with. Judge Nordberg ruled. That's what happened. We're moving on. But that doesn't mean that you can bring a sanctions motion against a law firm for $63,000 for work done by other lawyers. My associate who they're seeking sanctions for was 19 years old. I guess that puts him as a freshman or sophomore in college, and they're seeking sanctions against him for that work. The pro se argument you just heard is also wrong. Of course he's a pro se plaintiff for purposes of this appeal. Yes, he had clients, but he's seeking this money for himself. He doesn't have any attorney's fees for himself. He represented himself. It doesn't matter that he also had clients. As I read the motion, as I read the appeal, these are monies to go to Mr. Hunt. I just want to end by saying that I believe that, one other thing. Judge Nordberg did rule that he was exercising his discretion. And having exercised that discretion on a Rule 11, I don't think there's any basis to overturn it. And I think that this, again, is just a totally infirm appeal. It is based upon absolutely nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Hunt, your time has expired, but Ms. Morgan has challenged the veracity of certain statements and pleadings you made, so you certainly can have a minute to speak to that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The hearing was done by telephone, Your Honor. I didn't have the papers. I didn't even call by the court. I mean, the way this was done, it was so summary. I was absolutely caught by surprise at what the dates were and everything. I didn't have all that in front of me. So that's why the transcript after all that was not, I was sitting in an office, got the call from the court. That's not the way I understood this.
Was that a prearranged?
It was not arranged. The idea was that we were going to have a hearing, I thought, on the subject. I mean, it was like we're sitting here in court. He's arrived, and I decided basically that there's no point going forward. So I was a little bit surprised the way the matter was handled after all this period of time. I mean, that's what that's all about. There's no intent to mislead the court here. And the only other thing I wanted to mention is the idea that one attorney, there's a number of attorneys listed here. Only one has ever responded even to this particular motion. All these other people are still, I presume, practicing in this area. The fact of the matter is they're trying to say that one person, 19-year-old, was a law student. I mean, I didn't even know. Nobody ever filed to take over the case. You look in the rock docket records, so the attorneys are just coming and going in this case. That's all I have to say, Your Honor.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.